Kia ora and welcome back to Talking Dairy, where we dive into the most important topics on the minds of Kiwi dairy farmers. Today we're talking genetics. When it comes to making breeding decisions, which animal traits matter the most to you as farmers? Do you think environmental traits should be part of the breeding worth index? And how important is breeding for improved fertility in New Zealand? Well, those questions were recently put to around 300 dairy farmers as part of a review of the National Breeding Objective, which is managed by New Zealand Animal Evaluation Limited, otherwise known as NZAEL. On behalf of NZAEL, a science and technology firm called Abacus Bio did a survey to find out what matters to farmers and whether changes need to be made. So on the episode today, I'll be chatting with Dr. Peter Aymer, a world-renowned scientist from Abacus Bio, about the findings. He's going to give us a progress report on what farmers and scientists are thinking about when it comes to the cow of the future. Also on the show is Tanya Riddington, a 50-50 share milker in Culverden, North Canterbury. Tanya is one of a group of farmers known as the Advisory Panel who give regular feedback to NZAEL. As someone who's working hard to build up her own herd's genetics, she'll be putting some questions to Peter and challenging him on a few points. Let's get into it. Peter and Tanya, thank you so much for giving up your time to come on Talking Dairy today. Welcome. Tanya, I wonder if we could get started with you, please. Tell us a bit about yourself. Where do you farm? How long have you been there? And tell us how you got interested in the subject of genetics.
Cool. Well, hi, my name's Tanya. I'm fourth generation dairy farmer. We are currently 50-50 sheer milking 480 cows in Culverden, which is in North Canterbury. I started out lower water sheer milking in 2011 with 200 cows, and I've worked my way up to 50-50. I am sheer milking with my partner Tim, and we have two young boys. My dad was always interested in nominating his cows, so I guess I became interested in genetics at a very young age. I also have a love for cows, and I take great pride in breeding good stock. So that goes hand in hand with an interest in genetics, I guess.
Brilliant. I was reading a bit about you. You had a career in microbiology before you entered farming, is that correct?
Yes, I did a degree in food science and microbiology down at Otago. I really enjoy learning and researching and that kind of thing, and that's what kind of drew me to science. But it didn't take me long to realise actually farming's in my blood and actually I belong on the land. So, yeah, I wasn't actually a microbiologist for too long, just a couple of years.
When did you get involved in the NZAEL advisory panel and why?
I think it was 2017 because I've had a strong interest in genetics, I guess. That's why I got involved.
Hey, thanks for that introduction. Peter, over to you. What's your area of expertise and how did you end up in this field and how long have you been at Abacus Bio?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I've been at Abacus for about 21 years since it was founded. I've specialised in farm animal genetic improvement, although strayed off into lots of other disciplines along the way. And yeah, I really specialise in the kind of economic aspects of genetic improvement, what traits to improve, how much money is justified to spend trying to make that genetic improvement, those sort of questions.
Mm. Your work has taken you off on some interesting side paths. You've worked in fish genetics and cropping, correct?
Yeah, many of the scientific tools that we apply to dairy cows are also relevant to other farm species, and that includes fish. More recently, new genomic technologies are making what we've done in animals more relevant to plant breeding. You know, our business have picked up some quite big contracts working with in the sort of crop genetic improvement area, but really leveraging our expertise in trait prioritisation.
Peter, let's start with the basics. Tell us, what is New Zealand Animal Evaluation? What is the National Breeding Objective? And why do they matter to the everyday Kiwi dairy farmer?
New Zealand Animal Evaluation is an independent, industry-driven organisation that sits over the top of the efforts that are made by AB companies and farmers to make genetic improvement. So it tries to provide an independent voice and is responsible for managing all the data and herd test records, etc., that get collected, and making sure that we have sort of fair and independent evaluations of cows and, in particular, the AI bulls that are available for the industry. So the national breeding objective sets the direction for genetic change over time into the future. So the questions we ask, should we be focusing more on production and less on cow body size? Should we be focusing on fertility? Should we be focusing on survival? Should we be focusing on functional traits? There's no such thing as the perfect cow. We have to just keep working away at these things and get the balance of effort that we apply right.
Yeah, so that leads on to this review that you've been doing of the National Breeding Objective. Tell us a little bit about that. Why was that review necessary and what's the goal?
Yeah, so farming systems are changing all of the time. The opportunities for making genetic improvement through new technologies, new recording systems are changing all the time. So the National Breeding Objective is looking future focus, really focusing 10 to 20 years out. So we've undertaken two surveys, one for stakeholders, which includes the AB companies, breed societies, bull breeders. And then more recently, we've done a survey targeting more the grassroots farmers. These are the people that spend less time thinking about bull selection, but at the end of the day, they make up a large chunk of the industry. And we want to make sure that what we're aiming to do with breeding a future cow is fit for as much of the industry as we can possibly get.
How did you come up with, was it 300, around 300 to 500 farmers who took part in the survey? How were they selected?
The survey was undertaken online, so anybody could do it via a link, and the links were disseminated through both Dairy NZ networks, also AB companies, breed society networks, word of mouth, any possible way we could make it available for people to participate. The intention was to make the survey available to anybody who was interested enough to complete it. And we were absolutely delighted with the number of responses. It's quite hard to get farmers to complete very complex surveys. And I must admit that I'm not a great survey respondent myself. But, you know, we're over the moon with the number of people that made the effort. And it was a very complex survey.
Brilliant. What did you learn from the survey about what's important to farmers?
We've done a lot of these surveys in different industries across crops and dairy cows and beef farms around the world. And there's a general theme that we also had coming through from the survey is that when it comes to functional traits or traits that make cows easier to farm, farmers give those traits greater preference than what we would think when we do a sort of an economic assessment of the value of those traits to the farmers. So that sort of sends us this clear message that farming just isn't about profit, but it's just also about getting through the day, the routine, making it as enjoyable as possible. And also there's an element there of keeping things right for the cow as well. I think there's an animal welfare aspect to that. So we did see that pattern, and functional traits like fertility and survival and udder durability, those sorts of traits shone through as being more valued by farmers than what we might have thought based on purely economic calculations.
So my understanding, I'm no expert on this topic at all, but my understanding is that there's those eight traits, aren't there, in the breeding with index, but there are a whole lot more traits than that, maybe 27 in total that sit outside of it. Is that correct?
There's a large number of them, that's for sure.
From that survey, did it show you that actually some of those traits outside of those eight are actually really important to farmers? And so as a result, might that have an influence on the breeding with index?
So the standout trait in that regard was udder overall, which is a composite trait of various scores that the TOP scorers collect on basically first lactation cows in the herd. It's a sort of a combination of teat placement and ligament strength support attributes of the udder. So this was a trait that really stood out as something that farmers would like to see in the BW calculation. Part of the driver for this is a change in farm systems. There's a shift, I guess, to more solids per cow, which puts pressure on udders. There's also a shift to more once-a-day milking, either all season or part season, and that also puts pressure on udders. So as we see this system shift, the imperative for making sure that we have the right udder on the cow producing the milk is increasing.
Yeah, I understand that from the survey you discovered that there's some variation among farmers and that you've grouped them into so-called clusters. Can you tell us about those clusters?
Yeah, so first point I'd like to make is that for the majority of the traits, there was quite good alignment between these two groups of farmers. But the sort of preferences for traits that separated them, there was a group that were a lot more prepared to sacrifice production and productivity in order to get better udders and better fertility and less lameness. So it's how much are you prepared to trade off that functionality versus productivity? You know, that's the sort of difference that we often see. There are some farmers that say, well, I'll take the money even if it's a little bit more hassle. And there is other farmers that say, well, you know, my cows are producing enough. I can't feed them anymore, but I would really like them to be easier to farm. So that's quite a typical sort of split that we see when we do surveys of farmers.
So those clusters, I was wondering if there was any commonalities in them, like whether the type of cow they had on the farm or the area they were farming in the country or anything like that.
That's what we find with these surveys is the clusters tend not to be aligned like that. But I think one thing that we did pick up is that the people that are more interested in breeding, so a little bit more engaged, maybe they do nominated sires or they have supplied a bull to an AI company or had a contract mating. Those farmers that are more interested in breeding tend to be more interested in the functionality udder type traits, whereas the mainstream farmer who's not so interested in breeding might be a little bit less that way inclined.
What do you think about that, Tanya?
I fit into the first one, the functionality. And I agree. I agree with those findings. That's exactly what I would have thought.
Peter, based on that survey, how important is breeding for fertility in New Zealand? What are farmers' views on that?
So fertility is definitely a very, very important trait in farmers' minds. One thing, though, that we did pick up through the survey was that there are some concerns about whether the fertility breeding value is accurate enough to justify a lot more weighting. So a lot of research is going on into the fertility breeding value to make it better. I believe that there is room for improvement in the fertility breeding value, but the breeding value that we have and that we're moving to, they're sound. There is a lot of value in those estimated breeding values. There's a lot of opportunity to make genetic selection for fertility. So yes, we can make it better, but I definitely believe that the evaluation system is quite powerful at distinguishing between high fertility bulls and low fertility bulls when they have large numbers of daughters.
How much gain can we make through that BV?
Well, it depends how much weighting it gets in the index, but actually genetic merit for fertility has been quite static for a number of years. You know, it really is an aspect of farming that farmers need to improve both from a profitability and from an environmental perspective. By increasing the weighting, we might expect to see gains in 10 years' time in the region of 2-3% gains in 6-weekend calf rate if we really focus on it and really get the estimated breeding value right. You know, it might not sound like a big gain, but if you multiply that over 5 million cows, that is potentially a substantial impact.
Yeah, sure. One of the things you asked about in the survey was about the potential for future environmental traits to be part of the index as well. What did farmers say about that?
We got a really interesting and surprising result there. If I'd have been asked a few years ago what I would expect the farmers to respond to that question, I think most of them would say, no, let's not bother. Let's focus on profitability, milk production, efficiency, fertility. But we did get, you know, a large number of respondents, over half that said that they would be prepared to give up genetic progress and other traits in order to make gains in environmental traits, whether that be greenhouse gas emissions or nitrogen leaching. So obviously we have to have the genetic levers to pull on to make progress in those traits. And the scientists are still working hard on those aspects. But what we have learned is that if we can get good tools or criteria for farmers to select on and breeding companies to select on, there will be a demand from farmers for genetic changes in those sorts of traits.
That's fascinating. So I had a look at the PowerPoint presentation you gave on this survey, and the question was actually around giving up profit, wasn't it? Sacrificing profit for environmental genetic gain. That's quite telling, eh, about where farmers are at, that they would make that sacrifice for environmental improvements.
Yeah, I think it's a great reflection on farmers and their attitudes. I guess there's probably also an element of knowing that the industry has to be seen to be doing something positive. You know, at the end of the day, if the industry doesn't be seen to really be making an effort, it could cost a lot more profit through basically legislation and compliance issues. So, you know, obviously, I think that's also a factor that's been driving this response that I wasn't earlier expecting.
Yeah, sure. Hey, I've got one more question for you before I let Tanya cut loose. What's the role of genetics in herd repro performance, Peter?
Genetics is important, but it's a long-term impact. So you select a high fertility bull now, his daughters are going to be born in a year's time. They're going to enter the herd in 3 years' time. They're going to take another 4 or 5 years to move through the herd. You can't rely on genetics to solve your repro problems on your farm. What we do know, though, is that if you've had a long-term battle with getting repro right, then good fertility genetics really helps. So if you have great management of fertility, you can maybe get by with a little bit weaker fertility genetics. But if you're battling just to stay on top of it, then cows basically that are easy to get in calf really, really help those sort of situations.
Brilliant. Thanks, Peter. So, Tanya, you've been patiently listening here. I'd love to know if you've got some questions for Peter. So I'll let you put a few to him.
I just had a few questions for you, Peter. One was regarding, do you know what the average lactation of a dairy cow in New Zealand is?
I think it's in the range of 3.5 lactations per cow, which is a lot higher than in other countries.
What did you put on the cost of rearing replacements?
One of our farm consultants, Kevin Wilson, went through and did the sums at basically grazing rates for an average crossbred replacement heifer. And we came up with $2,000 there or thereabouts. By the time you factor in the milk replacer, labor, depreciation, you know, all the factors that you really need to work into it if you cost it out properly, which is a huge cost to the dairy farm business.
Yeah, and it really points the fact we need to extend our lactation of our cows and look towards longevity of our herd going forward. Also, I've got another question. Do you think that there's been too much emphasis placed on production at the expense of functional and survival traits in the past?
I don't know. I don't really want to criticise what's been done in the past because it's added a huge amount of value to the industry. If you take the cows of 20 years ago and think of the efficiency and the higher residuals they leave behind, there's a huge value in the genetic gain that's been made from productivity and efficiency. But the reality is that the future that we're facing, for environmental reasons, for animal welfare reasons, there really is a lot of merit in really aiming to improve these functional traits, survival and fertility.
Tanya, what's important to you in terms of fertility and productivity?
Well, involuntary culling of dairy cows due to infertility is the biggest issue affecting genetic gains, not only in my herd, but in the dairy industry as a whole. It's not uncommon to have herds with empty rates experiencing over 20%, and this is not sustainable dairying. I think there is a great need in getting the fertility BV accurate and correctly weighed into the BW. Especially now with the environmental pressures that are important. It is important that we keep driving herd efficiency to produce more milk with less cows while maintaining fertility.
Mm. Did you take part in the survey?
Yes, I took part in the mini surveys. There's a couple of surveys.
Okay. Was there anything when you went through the surveys that you particularly felt strongly about?
Well, what Peter said, a shift towards the more functional and survival traits, which he said farmers were in favour of, I was agreeing with that as well. I think strongly, it came over strongly, that udder overall, and I agree with that. We're pushing for that in the BW as well.
Sure, sure. So what's your view on the cow of the future and the opportunities for improving beef genetics?
I think now more than ever, we need to be thinking about the cow of the future, especially with the ever-increasing compliance requirements in regards to animal health, welfare and the environment. I think in the past there's been a drive in selecting for production, but I think going forward there'll be more emphasis on functional and survival traits. I also think traits like heat tolerant, disease resistance, pulled and environmental traits like greenhouse gas metabolism may also be common. We need to be breeding for longevity, hence why I asked that question regarding what the average lactation was for a cow. And breeding for longevity will result in less culling, less emissions, less replacements and less cows for the dairy industry. In terms of opportunities providing beef genetics, in my herd we make the bottom 20% of our cows to beef genetics. This adds value to our business as shear milkers. We own our own runoff block, so we have the option of either selling these beef calves at 100 kilos or finishing them off ourselves. We also rear our black and white bulls and we sell them at 100 kilos. For us, the ideal beef bull would be one that is short gestation with low birth weights while still producing a prodigy that finish well. I see this as creating value to not only the dairy industry but to the beef industry, while also reducing our calf wastage within the herd. I also read that the majority of this country's exports of beef is derived from the dairy industry. Is that true?
Yes, a substantial proportion at least, yes, through cull cows and dairy origin calves.
What is the average lactation of the dairy cow in New Zealand? My guess is that they've been declining over the years.
The evidence would say that the decline in the number of lactations is only quite small, but what is really interesting is that the reasons that cows get culled have changed dramatically over time. So it used to be that a lot of culls were low production and farmers getting rid of those low producing, fat, lazy cows. That's pretty much gone now. I guess with genetic gain for production and efficiency, very few cows get culled for low production. And really what's happened is the big shift has been culling for empties. You know, you mentioned the number of farmers that are really struggling with that kind of repro aspect of their herd. I guess as we look to the future, the sort of the pressure on the udders is going to be more of a factor that's affecting longevity. And many herds, it is a factor now. And one thing to consider, it's one thing to send an empty cow off at the end of the lactation when you've got, you know, she's done the work for that year for you. When you lose an udder early in the lactation, you've spent all the money over the winter, you've had the calving, etc. Then you've now lost all of that extra expense on top of the fact that you have to replace the capital asset of that cow. So these are economically important aspects of dairy farming.
Because there's less cows getting culled on production now and more getting culled on fertility and broken down udders, is that slowing the rate of genetic process within the New Zealand dairy herd?
It possibly is a little bit, but the real driver of genetic gain comes through the AI sires. You know, the long-term compounding genetic gain comes from those elite bulls that get widely used. So, yes, breeding replacements from the better daughters in the herd or the ones that have survived better, it does help. And obviously, if you're culling more cows, you need to keep a higher proportion of your heifer replacements, which means that more of your herd has to go to AB and some of the extra cows to AB are lower genetic merit. Yes, that's true. But the thing that really changes the herd over time comes through the AI sire team that you choose to use.
Hey, Tanya, just to finish up on, what's your advice to other farmers who want to improve the genetic merit of their herds?
My biggest advice would be to feed your young stock to grow your young stock to over target weights. There's no point buying in the best genetics to underfeed them so they don't reach their target weights. They're not going to perform to their full potential. Also, we mate our yearlings to nominated sires and we mate our bottom 20% to terminal sires as well. And those bottom 20% will either be on production or undesirable traits such as high sow count, lameness, udders, type.
Peter, same question to you. What's your advice?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I'm going to give you the warning that I grew up on a dairy farm a long time ago. It would be fair to say I probably wasn't a particularly successful farm boy. I did my time. I mowed the lawns. I milked a lot of cows. But I was the sort of dreamboat that would forget to put the pipe in the vat or forget a cow that the whole back end of it was painted red should be not put in the main bulk tank, but should be separated off. Unfortunately, I was a dreamboat dreaming about other things. And I guess, you know, that served me well in my scientific career. And the fact that I think like that.
You've ended up being very useful to the dairy industry though, so.
Yeah, well, hopefully, but farmers should be careful about taking advice from somebody like me in terms of their own farm system and farm operation. You know, there is a lot of value in genetics. That would be the point that I would make. And putting some consideration into it, if you can spare it, learning it doesn't have to be as technical and horrible as it might seem. The indexes that help, there's a lot of good resources on NZAL websites. AB company representatives can help a lot to understand what's going on, breed societies. Yeah, there is a lot of long-term value from improving the genetic merit of your herd. And, you know, the trials that compare cows from 30 years ago with cows from 10 years ago show the amazing impacts. So being on the cutting edge of that, there is a lot of value there if you're prepared to just put in a little bit effort to learn more about that.
Yes, excellent. Thank you, Peter. And thank you so much, Tanya, as well, for your time. It's brilliant chatting to you. And I know people will have enjoyed listening to the conversation. Is there anything else either of you would like to add before we finish up?
I've got two things. I think the longevity of a dairy cow is greatly underrated. I have 10 to 11-year-old still in my herd that I would consider are the invisible cow. They've had no health problems, no udder problems. They've gotten calf every year and they're still producing for 500 milk solids plus. These are the cows that I want to breed from, yet they have the lowest BWO cows in my herd.
I guess as a scientist, you know, we look at that a little bit differently. So most of your cows are probably 2, 3, 4, and 5 years of age. So because they are most of your cows, they are the cows that we really want to focus on getting better survival in. So we tend to look at how a bull's daughters progress from first to second, second to third, third to fourth lactation. And we're really interested in survival at that age, because that's the ages that are relevant for the majority of most people's herds. So we don't look to those very old cows. One, for a bull to know if his daughter's going to live till they're 11 years old, that just takes too long. In the breeding game, we're looking at turning generations over. So that just unfortunately puts those older cows at a disadvantage. As a scientist looking at it, they are the sort of factors that mean that maybe we don't pay as much attention to those older cows as what you would like.
Do you think that they are penalised in the BW for that?
No, because 10 years of genetic progress, that's 2 kilos of milk solids. That's a year, so that's 20 kilos of milk solids. At $5 or $6 net over feed costs, you know, it's $100 a cow. That's a lot to make up for extra survival. And the problem is that a lot of the variation we see in survival comes down to luck. So yes, there's an underlying genetic driver that affects the risk a cow faces, but a lot of cows just straight out get unlucky. They just miss a couple of cycles, or they catch a disease, or they get lame because they stand on something. So we have to be really careful that we look for consistent, strong signals and data before we make conclusions about what's genetically better or worse. So we sort of look at those old cows. Yes, they must have great genes for survival, but there's probably a lot of other daughters that also had great genes for survival, which were just unlucky. I don't think that we're biasing against them. The methods have all been developed to try and deal with these sorts of things, but it's just we have a different way of looking at those sort of issues because we believe that we can drive more genetic progress and get the survival in those age groups where most of the cows in the herd actually are.
My last one's just a point that I want to make. Frail cows with undesirable udders and lameness issues is not a good look for the industry. What happens on farm can be uploaded on social media in seconds for the world to see. We need to be breeding healthy, happy cows.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, it's great for everybody to hear that sentiment coming from the farmers. And, you know, this is really the message that we've got out of this MBO review process. And we're doing the best we can as sort of scientists driving this system to move the system to achieve those goals. But bearing in mind that there is still the need to be competitive on an international market with a grass-based system. So getting the balance of all the different factors is fair and ultimately what we need for the future as we can.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of it comes down to management on farm, but genetics plays a part as well.
Yeah, sure. And like my world is genetics, but your world is farming. And certainly there's no doubt that getting the farming bit right is probably more important than getting the genetics bit right. But there is a huge value from the genetics if you're patient and you put the effort in.
Such a good chat, guys. Thank you. I really, really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tanya. I think it really helped bringing in your real-world experience there. It's a lot of credibility.
Absolutely, it did, yeah. Hey, thank you so much, both of you. Excellent conversation. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for tuning into Talking Dairy. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you'd like to check out more of our podcasts, go to dairynz.co.nz/podcast or find us on your favourite podcast platforms.